The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
It's Friday, and do we have something special on tap for all of you around the world tonight? This is going to be an unforgettable program, as so many with Admiral Harry Cooper are. He is, of course, a researcher and historian, an adventurer, an acrobat with a specialty on 10-foot ladders and roofs. He's extraordinary. He used to be with Ringling Brothers, but they retired him because he kept slipping.
They don't have elephants anymore.
That's it. His efforts, by the way, on behalf of all of us and all who love truth and reality, with his deep cover agents and associates, have unearthed some of the most astonishing cover-ups and lies of World War II and beyond, lies that continue to this very day. His now world-famous organization, Shark Hunters, which you can join, and we'll tell you how to do that tonight and get a special gift as well, is continuing to roll back the globalist lies and secrets which have held the better part of the world hostage for at least 75 years and counting now. Tonight, another landmark program, as I said, disclosure and truth heard nowhere else but right here, truths that can and will bring history, as it's called, into accord and alignment with the facts concerning what really happened. We've got lots of pictures to look at tonight and many stories to hear. So, Admiral, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you very much. In the course of our show this evening, if you hear a lot of paper rattling and stuff, just be patient, because my office looks like a bomb went off in the public library. I got stacks of paper all over the place.
At least they're stacked. Things could be worse.
That's true. There are stacks all over the place, and if you hear me holler, that's because I've stubbed my foot on something here walking around. You can hardly even move in my office.
Now, you can hear our former programs that we have done, that Harry and I have taken so many wonderful trips together with, trips that he's already made, but we get to join him in a reprise, so to speak, by way of photographs and all the stories and anecdotes that he can share, and they are really unforgettable. It's just been a great journey, and there are many more ahead. Tonight is a big one because Harry just got back from a very special research, I'm going to call it an expedition,
because that's what it was.
In Europe, meeting with his agents. And I also saw just the other day another report of a, I believe it was an Argentine or Brazilian production about, gee gosh, holy cow, Adolf Hitler didn't die in the bunker. And, you know, once again, this all, and I'm not knocking anybody's honest research, but it all traces back, all of it, to Harry Cooper's work and what he found out over 20 years ago about the truth regarding Adolf Hitler, Eva Braun, tens of thousands of Germans of more or less a political bent. And, of course, now we know that there were over 9,000 German scientists who were brought over to the U.S. under paperclip. And they began, of course, to assemble prestige, respect, and took over what became NASA. The director of NASA, Dr. Kurt Debus, was one of the most brilliant of all German rocket scientists. He was involved with so much over there. He was the director of NASA for, I believe, around 12, almost 13 years until the early 70s. An extraordinary man with Dr. Wernher von Braun and others, so many others. All right, let's go and tell the folks what prompted this expedition.
As you know, I was down, I spent 4 weeks in South America in February gathering more information. We talked about that on one of your shows.
What's really fun, by the way, is to talk to Harry off the air about some of this stuff, because some of this stuff we just can't put on the air. Not yet, anyway. And he does share a little with me.
Yeah, there's some things that that are real intel that you know, I've been told some things and been told you know, this is in confidence, and so it doesn't go any farther. But then there's some other humorous things too. This time, one of my people, Feldwebel Schultz, had some new information. And even before we get into the pictures, he had some more information about that JU-390, the big aircraft. And I also made arrangements to meet with Igor Witkowski, who is an incredible researcher, and in my opinion, probably the number one researcher in the world on Die Glocke, the so-called Nazi bell. And then into Monte Carlo. I'm trying to remember how much I can say and how much I can't say, but by the time we get to the Monte Carlo part, I hope I can remember what I'm supposed to say and not say.
Well, he mentioned just a moment ago, folks, excuse me for the folks, but ladies and gentlemen, the huge airplane. Now, that airplane can be seen on the cover of Hitler in Argentina, Harry's landmark book, which has spawned the careers of at least half a dozen documentary makers and others who have all the information
at their... We don't get paid.
It's crazy. But that aircraft, an extraordinary behemoth of engineering, a marvel of engineering, which could fly enormous distances, has quite a history to it, and we're going to hear a little bit more about that tonight.
Right. We'll probably we'll kick off with that a little bit. there have been questions asked how many were actually built, and if you look at the internet, you can get all sorts of answers there off the internet, and you know, the internet is free and it's worth exactly what you pay for it. In most cases, not worth diddly squat. I think there's a couple of sites that say 11 of these were made, and that's just not correct. They built three of them, and they were JU-390-V1 and then -V2 and then -V3, which had nothing to do with the V weapons. That's just their nomenclature. V3 was never finished, so it was broken up either by the Germans, but probably by the Allies. I don't have that in front of me.
So much of the German Luftwaffe, the hardware, the planes, just broken to pieces, melted down. So I guess I bought JU-390 number 6, so I guess I wasted my money, huh?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well,
where
right.
did you park it? You know, you can't put it in your garage. It's a pretty big aircraft. V1, it flew some recon flights. There's a story about that aircraft flying to within 20 miles of New York City, and there's an artist rendition of what it would look like. No, that didn't happen. It never flew over here to the U.S. Then V2 is the one that we need to focus on. That was bigger than V1, 3 meters longer, which meant the fuel tanks were bigger and it had more fuel capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one that flew out of Schweidnitz in the closing moments of the war, literally the closing moments of the war. It was in an air base at a place called Schweidnitz, which I think was on the by the Romanian border. It's in one of these piles of paper around here. And there were several Ju-290s and some FW-200s. And the Red Army had encircled the base, but some of the top Waffen-SS troops were surrounding the base to keep the Red Army out for a few more days while they could evacuate various people and things. So V2 flew from there to Norway, and I don't know exactly when it was painted, but it was painted in the light blue of the Swedish Air Force, with Swedish Air Force markings.
Mm-hmm.
Landed in Norway, and from there it went down to Uruguay. And one of our agents, they all have unique names, this one was Peter Parker, said without question Hitler was on board that airplane. According to him, and also to Feldwebel Schultz, there were also many crates on board. Some had counterfeit British pounds sterling. You know, there was the effort during the war to destabilize England by counterfeit money.
Right.
And also had crates of gold and silver and precious jewels. So it landed down in Uruguay. And as you know, when I was there in February, we went to the actual estancia where it landed.
This is really amazing, ladies and gentlemen. Now, you did hear correctly that we do have it on authority that on that aircraft for that flight, Adolf Hitler, his wife, Eva Braun, probably Martin Bormann, and other very high-ranking German government officials, along with an awful lot of booty, as they say.
Yeah, not sure Bormann was on that plane, but
don't know.
For sure Uncle Adi was on that plane.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were there, we met several old people, mostly old ladies, who heard about the story. But we did talk to one old lady, 94 years old. She actually heard the engines of the airplane as it landed. And that's all on our website, sharkhunters.com, and you go to previous tours, and it's all there. So this lady, I don't want to say her name because then we'll have all these characters knocking on her door.
Yeah.
And
now you looked her in the eye when she said this, correct?
Oh, yeah, there's pictures of her on the website.
Yeah, I know. I remember the picture, but I'm just going over this for our listeners who didn't hear that. Harry was there. She told him, I heard the plane.
Right.
Did she say anything else about the plane?
No, she just heard it. She didn't see it. She heard it in the night. It landed in the dark. And it's easy to understand that she heard it. This thing had six big engines on it.
Yeah.
And it had a lot of wing area. So its landing speed or stall speed was in the area of 60 to 70 miles an hour. And it had a huge, big undercarriage. So it could land just about anywhere. It was built to take off and land on grassy fields as well as a hard strip.
That's a pretty gutsy landing, though, at night in a foreign country in the dark. I'm sure they had lighting there somehow, but...
Yeah, well, especially in Uruguay, because Uruguay was about the only South American country that was anti-Nazi during the war.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as World War II started, September the 1st, 1939, immediately everything German was illegal in Uruguay. They had German schools all over the place. Nope, they couldn't be German schools. They had to change a lot of stuff. They couldn't speak German in public. The professor or the headmaster of the German school in this little community where the plane landed was arrested in September of 39 and hauled off to prison. Nobody heard from him since. So anything German in Uruguay was pretty iffy. So anyhow, we know for sure a couple of things. First off, there were not 11 of these aircraft made, and if you bought V6, you've wasted your money.
Damn. All right.
Yeah.
Well, there's always eBay.
There you go. Just make sure you take the swastika off the tail, because otherwise they won't deal with you.
Well, it looks so nice sitting on my desk here, though. I just, well, never mind.
So anyhow, there were 3 built, only 2 were flying. That's fact. V2 did go down to South America. It did bring Hitler with it, and it had, as you call it, booty on board. Feldwebel Schultz, or one of our people met with the co-pilot of this airplane in 1969 in a tapas bar in Madrid. Now, I have no idea what a tapas bar is, but I guess tapas is something they eat over there. The co-pilot confirmed that they had many cases of the counterfeit British pounds, diamonds, gold, silver, etc. Did not have Die Glocke on board, which we know, but there are rumors that it had Die Glocke on board too, but it did not. But the co-pilot refused to name the pilot or any of the passengers. And when he was asked point blank if Hitler was on the plane, he just smiled and looked off into whatever you look into in a tapas bar.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the other one, Peter Parker, did indeed, and I can't go into his background, but believe me, this guy is deep cover, and he knows what he's talking about.
Peter Parker suggests an Anglo. Was he German with an Anglo name? What is he? I don't
these
want details. That's just what they
the
use.
Names that we invent.
All right, very good.
That's not his real name.
I know that.
And I'm not even going to tell you whether it's really a he or a she.
Ah, okay. Well, with all those transsexual genders out now, you never know.
No, he's not. He or she is not transsexual gender or anything. It's just disinformation.
I understand.
So, anyhow, we are absolutely certain that there were only 3 of these planes built. Only 2 of them were flying.
Mm-hmm.
And V2 went down to South America, and it took Hitler and a bunch of goodies with him. So that much we have confirmed. Other things that we're zeroing in on, and thanks to Feldwebel Schultz, we're getting a little more. The world knows that 2 German submarines were en route and surrendered in South America 3 months after the war was over. U-530 under Otto Wermuth, who was a member of Shark Hunters until his death, and U-977 under Heinz Schäfer surrendered 3 months after the war ended in Mar del Plata. And there's quite a story there. He wrote a book, Heinz Schäfer, in which he claimed that he saved fuel by snorkeling 66 days underwater. Well, we have since proven that was deliberate disinformation, because if you're running a submarine underwater, your parasite drag is a lot higher because you got all those angular structures and the gun and the conning tower and seagull poop and all that stuff that you're pushing through the water. So, and I was supposed to meet with his son when I was in Europe a couple of weeks ago, but that just didn't mesh. But I'm going back over there in September, October, so I'll be meeting with him, I believe, at that time. So we've known all along that there's been a third submarine because U-977 was in radio contact with another German U-boat down there after U-530 had surrendered in Mar del Plata. So we know there was at least one more. And it was U-600 and something. We don't know the rest of it. We're still looking in on that, but it had been damaged in an accident in 1943, went into the shipyard for repairs, and then disappeared, which means it was taken out for other black operations.
Right.
And this boat, we believe, is the one that went down there. Where is it now? We don't know.
So I bought a bum submarine, too.
Well, if you know where it went, let us know. It was full of Nazi gold, wasn't it?
I always trust.
Always were full of gold.
They always were. They might as well have made them with gold. I always trust people, and I always get burned.
I don't know how they sank so many ships. They're just floating around with gold and diamonds on them.
All true.
And treasures from the Louvre and all that crazy stuff. So, but at any rate, we know it went down there somewhere. And that's an excuse for me to go down there again. My Argentine guide is chomping at the bit to have me down there again and start looking in some of these other places. And also some friends in Brazil. They're about to come out with a book. They've already published the book, but it's in Portuguese, which is their native language. And they ran it through a Google translator into English. And fortunately, I read it before they published it. And, Google translation is not real translation. And I'm not knocking Google. It's just that you never translate words. You translate thoughts. And so this translated book right now comes out like, throw me from the train, a kiss, throw me down the stairs, each by each, my shoes. So they're having an English person, English-speaking person, go over it to smooth it out. But they have proof that a couple other people who committed suicide really didn't and lived out their life down in Brazil, and of course around Paraguay. This is the area called the TBA, the tri-border area, where a finger of Argentina sticks up between Paraguay and Brazil. And that's where that house was that those numbnuts that did the Hunting Hitler series.
Yeah.
That's where the ruins of that house were that they claimed was Hitler's house.
Oh, it was just a very primitive structure to begin with.
Right. It was. We believe it was a safe house for people who were on the lam because, remember, Perón was giving them great protection until he got ousted from power. So they were going into Brazil and Paraguay. And from where this house stood, you could literally see across the river to the shores of Paraguay to the west. And to the east was only a short distance to Brazil. So this was a very busy area. There's also a town there, I have to go back to it, where reportedly 85% of the people there, older, are identical twins.
And now that's
Mengele
wild.
Mengele had a home in that area. So there's something to see there, too, I believe. But that's another time. It's too bad, that I can't control time because I still have to put out a magazine, and I got two more books coming out this week, I think it is. U-Boat Volume 7 and Volume 8.
Wow. We're going to get to books a little bit later, but stay tuned. And there are some extraordinary... You want to walk backward into history and live it. This is the only way to do it, is to read the words of the people who were there. And they are all in Harry's books. Amazing.
It was so much fun putting those books together, too.
And as I say
about the one's U-boat series, and also the Eagles, when the Eagles soared, that's more flyboy stuff, and the U-boats obviously is submarine stuff. You don't have a story running through the entire book like you do with a normal book. Each chapter is a separate, standalone memory of a different guy. You know, some of the greats, like Otto Kretschmer, Erich Topp, Reinhard Hardegen, who just turned 103 a couple of months ago, Hans-Georg Hess, the youngest combat submarine commander to win Knight's Cross. And then there were also guys like Georg Hugel, who was the radio operator on the first submarine into the war. Otto Dietz, the guy who was a pharmacist mate on a very rare boat, U-180, which was a Type 9 D-1. They only made two of them. And they had a special patrol to the Indian Ocean, and they had Abad Hassan, and what the heck was the Indian leader's name? Subhas Chandra Bose. And they brought him to, those two guys, to a meeting point in the Indian Ocean where they transferred them onto a Japanese sub that took them to Japan, because he had the bright idea. He was going to get a lot of the Indians who were in Japanese POW camps, because they had been fighting on the side of the Brits. He was going to get them to change over to fight on the side of the Axis, and he was going to form the Indian National Army.
Oh, interesting. Yeah,
and so Otto Dietz had a month or so to talk to Bose, because there's not much work for a pharmacist mate to do on board a sub.
Right.
So he learned a lot from Bose, which we put in some of those books. Operation Ursula, most people think that German subs were not in combat until the 3rd of September 1939, when they sank the liner Athenia. But in fact, they were sinking ships in 1936. They were part of a clandestine operation helping Franco in the Spanish Civil War. They were sinking communist ships and even a Spanish submarine, C-3. So all that's in the book, the books. Some American submarine guys, some American submarine guys who actually crewed German U-boats after the war. Just everything's in there, and it's stuff that, that you'll never see anywhere else. You won't read it in a normal history book, because
it just ain't there. No, there's not much in normal history books that's worth reading anymore.
A lot of good fiction.
Yeah, it's true.
I shouldn't say good fiction, but creative.
It's fiction. Yeah,
creative fiction.
They got the best writers at it. They've been 70 years to start writing it their way, and they've done it.
Yeah.
Okay, so you went to Europe. Some of these people you met, in what countries did these meetings occur? Don't give cities, don't give addresses, but I'm just generally speaking. You mentioned Monte Carlo. So where did you go first?
That was the last part. Say again?
Where did you go first?
First I went to Munich, because I always try to fly in and out of Munich. It's a very convenient airport. And that's when I met with Feldwebel Schultz and his niece, Fräulein Marzali. Boy, it's hard to spell and read that.
What does a Feldwebel mean?
Sergeant.
Okay, very good.
So Feldwebel Schultz?
Sergeant Schultz. Now, does that reflect a little sense of humor about Hogan's Heroes?
I know nothing. I see nothing. I hear nothing.
I couldn't resist that. Sergeant Schultz.
Of course. Excuse me. So, anyhow, we met, and you know this part of the story. We went to a restaurant. It's a Frühstückzimmer, a breakfast room. And in Germany especially, but most of Europe, you have a special room in a hotel for breakfast. They don't serve lunch or dinner there. That's in another room. But the breakfast room, the Frühstückzimmer, they stop serving breakfast about 9, 10 o'clock, and then it just empty the rest of the day. So it was about 2 in the afternoon. We went into this Frühstückzimmer, about 150 seats, empty, totally empty, not a soul in the place except us. We went right into the middle of the hall, sat down, and we weren't there 2 minutes, and damn, some young blonde woman came and sat down right smack behind me, back to back behind me, not 2 feet away from me. This whole huge hall, totally empty, and she sits down right behind me.
Well, not everybody gets an A in spy school, right? So,
yeah, honest to God, you know, you'd think she'd have had some kind of a parabolic mic or something. No, she sits down right behind me, and she's taking notes. I said, what the hell? So I told Feldwebel Schultz and his niece, Fräulein Marzali, oh, let's go to the other end of this room here. Which we did, and a good friend of ours, who's another member of Shark Hunters, who's a retired sergeant major, still living over there. He retired from the U.S. Army, still living over there. He says that's par for the course. He says you could go into an empty restaurant with 1,000 seats, empty seats, and you sit down, and they'll sit down right next to you.
That's funny.
It just real. Well, World War II showed that the German spy service was terrible. Because Germans just can't lie. And so their spy service was terrible. And I guess it still is. This woman was probably Verfassungsschutz or Bundesnachrichtendienst. So anyhow, we moved. And that's now is when we start coming into these pictures that we have here.
Okay. All right. Let's ask everyone. To be sure, you go to the guests section on the left-hand
right.
Side at Rents and look for Harry Cooper and guests. And underneath that, you'll see photos. So let's load those pictures up. No cheating. Let's go through them together. It's more fun that way. Well, even if you did go ahead, you wouldn't understand them. So.
Well, I was just going to say it doesn't make any sense the other way.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to me sometimes, and I'm the guy who did it. No, I'm just kidding there. The first thing, A1, that is a Google Earth image of what he claims, probably rightfully so, is a portal, a dome that was left open into the ground. You've got the coordinates there. I guess James was having trouble finding it on Google. It said it can't go to it.
Oh, well. Hey, did he give you this image? How did you get this image?
This image, the one with the yellow circle on and all that, I got from Feldwebel Schultz.
He handed it to you. Okay.
Yes, handed it to me. The other two were two that your guy James came up with.
Yeah, we've had those. Yep.
Right. But now, according to James, he wasn't able to zero in on this thing anymore with Google Earth. And according to Feldwebel Schultz, when he was able to zero in on it again a couple months ago, it was all covered with artificial clouds.
No surprise.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there. Now, take a look at that. I don't know what the scale is on that image, how wide that opening is, but it's clearly an opening. It's clearly not a natural opening, and it goes right into the walls. What are we going to guess? It's 30 feet across, maybe, something like that?
No, I think I've got it written down here. Oh, let me see here. Shuffle paper. I think he said it was 45 meters.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. That's
still winging it here.
That's well over 100 feet across.
Yeah.
That's plenty big enough to fly 30, 40, 50, 60-foot craft in and out of. Easy.
Well, if that's what they were doing.
If that's what they were doing.
Yeah, he is of the opinion, and I think he's right, if we roll down a little more, photo A2, he drew a picture of a...
Before we do that, let's look at pictures number 2 and 3. Those are the two that we got, and I've forgotten where we got them. But
I don't know.
Picture number two is another Google Earth image with another opening. They rather look triangular. And if it's 100 meters across or 40 meters across, and maybe it's the same width, there's a blow-up of it. Look how clear that is.
Yeah.
That's clearly an artificial structure.
That must have been from some time ago, I believe, because like I said, your webmaster could not zoom in on it. It could not get it again, and fell away.
I can't remember where I got it. I got it. Somebody sent it to me. I don't remember who.
But James couldn't get to it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
sure.
Maybe it's just one of those things where no matter how hard you try, it ain't going to.
They're not going to let us see it anymore. All right, so
right.
A1, and go down to picture number 4, which is picture A2.
Yep.
And what do we got here? That's odd.
That is Feldwebel Schultz's drawing of what he said is a cold water reactor. Whatever the hell that means. It's a cold water reactor. He's not a very good artist. But you see where he writes door over there on the right side underneath ice? That refers to this dome opening and then a tunnel inside. We'll get to a bigger blow-up of that in a short
mm-hmm.
short.
Mm-hmm. So that's the entrance we're looking at in picture one. And
yeah.
there's a tunnel in there, and you go inside, and it hooks around to the left. And
yep.
then there's a large... Obviously, a large cavernous area there.
Right, and he said that is where the reactor was.
All right.
And then
and
if you follow the dotted line down below that and around mm-hmm. back to your right, no, I'm mm-hmm. sorry, that's where the reactor was.
Yeah, the drawing matches his earlier one. So
right.
I don't know what's in the middle there. That's a big... big. Maybe
ask him about that again.
Well, it could be a shopping mall. You never know.
Maybe
this
that's
is
where that JU 390 is parked.
I don't know. This is very interesting. Did he say, and I don't want any disclosures here unless you got them and can share them, did he say how he knew what the shape of this underground facility was like and what the structure of it was? And that there was
the reactor?
No, the whole he's got an idea of what the thing looked like underground. He's drawn
right,
it.
Right. He did not tell me his source.
All right, and we have to also mention that this reactor was built by. Go ahead.
He believes either Russia or the U.S. Most likely, Russia.
Okay.
And this was all part of. I guess, and Neue Schwabenland, not sure about that. I'm still shuffling papers here.
So this reactor would have been something vintage circa in the 1960s,
60s.
Perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah, 60s.
Okay.
And if we go down to picture A3, I've traced over it in yellow, but he drew a line up there, the pyramid rock. Then down below that, I've highlighted in yellow because he drew with black on a black background. It's kind of hard to see black on a black background unless you got a light mm-hmm. to shine on it and show the shininess. That's where he believes the reactor was inside the mountain.
So
that's
under
the line of the reactor.
In the Pyramid Mountain underneath in that area, that's where he's suggesting the reactor is. Okay, all right.
All right. So let's see what else. He said that it's most likely Russian built, and there was a nuclear incident in the 1960s, and according to what he tells, I'm reading my notes right here, it says, workers ran, left the dome open, returned in the 90s, maybe to retrieve something.
So they ran the hell out of there because of some kind of a problem. Obviously, either a radioactive leak or a meltdown, something.
Chernobyl.
The reactor screwed up, and they got out of there, all right.
The Russians are not known for their nuclear safety.
No.
I've been on board some of their submarines, and believe me, their nuclear safety, their safety of any kind is
a
little bit...
funny you would say that, because they hired us, the U.S., to, as you know, dismantle remove the reactors from and cut up a lot of old, aging Russian nuclear submarines. The Russians said they didn't have the money for it. I think it was more than that, but...
Well, yeah. Before the U.S. got involved with it, their way of disposing of it is just
pull the plug,
cut the submarines loose, and let them sink, or let them just bob around in a fjord somewhere and rust away with
Real
their
smart.
Nuclear pile on board.
Yeah,
kind of.
Yes.
Primitive.
All right. Picture A4.
A4. What do we got here? Okay, there's the tunnel and the door, and the dome tunnel. And you can see the yellow lines I've drawn on there where he drew black over the black picture.
Mm-hmm.
The tunnel. Now, this tunnel apparently is has more in it, or had more in it, than just the reactor. It had other working stuff in there.
Right. When we call that a tunnel door... We're talking about the entrance that we saw back up in picture A1.
Right.
All right.
And this was apparently Russian. So,
mm-hmm.
A5 was a chart that first he handed to me and said, you cannot print this. And then he said, well, you can print the center section, but all the stuff around the edge you can't print. You look at this and you can see... Neuschwabenland is up there towards the top, just a tad below where it says Feldwebel Schultz. See where it says German Neuschwabenland?
Certainly do. It's written in red there.
Yeah. And the area is surrounded in red line.
Mm-hmm.
And it's showing, everybody had something named after them down there. There's Queen Mary Land, and there's King Edward Land, and Marie Bird Land. Jesus, everybody had some. You and I probably got a land named after us down there.
Cooper Country on the
other
side.
Mm-hmm. And that's where you find your V6 transport.
Careful, I'm going to send it to you if you keep teasing me.
Good luck landing at the airports around here.
Well, UPS does a good job with these.
Okay, there you go. This was handed to me just to show how the layout was down there, where Neuschwabenland was in relation to all these other lands that are
uh-huh.
claimed by God knows how many other countries.
Yeah. May Robertson Land. Gee, look at all those names.
Right. I had no idea before I got this thing, too. This was an older map also.
Mm-hmm.
And
all right, well, this is where, just to recap, 1938-39, the Germans mounted a major expedition to go down there. We've done a program on that, and there are mm-hmm. pictures up under Harry's name. You can go look at them. And the question is, they showed in that movie, it was about an 8-minute film that was obviously done for domestic consumption in the movie theaters in Germany and maybe other friendly nations. In the eight and a half minute film, which has lots of still pictures in it, you wonder what they didn't show you. Now, if the Germans first went down there in 38-39 in that expedition, it would seem that it left not a lot of time because of the war to build enormous and advanced things down there. However, if they were the inheritors of facilities that were already down there, perhaps, constructed by visitors from elsewhere who allegedly have three large facilities down there and didn't need one, and part of their deal with the Germans was they gave the Germans use of one. So maybe there's something to that. Who knows? There's so much about this story that's just fascinating. And the photos that are in the clip that I got from that film, I had James go through and take every picture out of it, photo, still photo. They are the stunning underground caverns. Huge, huge.
There's so much down there that we need to look at, but we're we're a little stymied in that right now, but we'll get to that part later.
Yeah.
Richard was the guy in charge. Richard was in charge of the Neuschwabenland expedition, and he had plans for a second expedition. and he was going to bring small aircraft with skis so they could get around on land, because the only planes they had for the first one were the flying boats, the Dornier Whales, and they couldn't land on the snow. So he was going to come back with ski planes, but
yeah,
the war started, and that was the end of that story.
Now, that suggests that however they got to the locations we have pictures of, they walked.
Yeah,
they had to walk.
But, yeah, but, you know, if you have to go someplace 200, 300 miles, you ain't going to walk it there.
No, that's my point, that these locations that we have pictures of probably were relatively close to water.
Yeah, to the edge.
Okay.
Yep. Oh, yeah, there we see Queen Maudland. KGN is short for Koenigin, which means queen.
Mm-hmm.
Queen Maudland. Boy, oh boy, everybody got their name on something.
Yeah. Now, so, you should fly over there and drop markers with your name on it. There are no deeds to that property. You can claim.
Well, according to some of the things we'll see later, some of the charts of the old days shows that there are areas that Herrenlos, which means nobody here, and there's a good part of it where nobody was there, but over the decades after the war, I suspect it's been pretty well claimed, this part, that part, and the other part.
I think there are an awful lot of operations going on down there now, like dozens of various
types.
Yeah,
the Russians we know are down there by Lake Vostok, and I don't know. I've been told that we can't go there, but... I still have my Russian submarine officer papers, so who knows? Maybe I can get in there, as long as they don't shoot us.
Yeah. All right. Picture A6, Harry. What's that?
A6. This is another drawing from Feldwebel Schultz. East of the dome. Now, the dome is right there, the big circle. That's the dome that was open. Then the tunnel going off to the upper and right, 320 meters, and it shows there's a room there, or the dome with the other thing going down and to the right, 980 meters, that's a tunnel. So, there, you know, 980 meters, that's three-quarters of a mile. Obviously, that was not just an empty
Now, the dome is the center area, which we originally thought might be the location of the reactor, but that appears to be down at the lower right. There's another drawing down there that suggests the red. That's the Pyramid Mountain, and it looks like...
Right, and the dome was just merely the entry.
Uh-huh.
And the way to get out in a hurry when something goes wrong.
And then there's the doorway on the right. You can see that door.
Yeah.
All right. Now these are pretty interesting numbers, numerical values to come up with. So Feldwebel Schultz, 320 meters. He didn't write 350. He wrote 320.
Right.
And he wrote 980. So
yeah, not a thousand.
Somebody's talking here to somebody somewhere.
Yeah, he is one hell of a researcher. He, like I say, was in. The Tapas Bar in Madrid talking to the co-pilot. He's been back and forth over there several times.
Uh-huh.
I can't get too much further into.
Is the co-pilot still
there.
Alive, Harry? I don't mean to interrupt you, but that's a fascinating angle. Do you know?
No, you interrupt anytime you want. No, unfortunately, he died last year because I was trying to twist Feldwebel Schultz's arm for his address and for an introduction, but. He said, no. He said, I promised the guy while he was alive I could not tell this. So once he's dead, I can't very well talk to him. His initials were RS. That's all I know. And he lived in Argentina, not in Buenos Aires, but down on a little point off of one of those bays down there. I think it was Golfo Nuevo. Mm. He lived in that area.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
not anymore. Oh. He's gone.
All right. Let's make sure that the guy on the boat that took you out to the estate doesn't check out either. We got to get to that guy.
Yeah. We finally got his name. Von Alvensleben.
All right, let's not give that out.
Okay.
That was his, that was his nickname.
That was his nickname.
Okay. Picture A7 from Mr. Schultz. Herr Schultz is one of those markers that Feldwebel Schultz, one of those markers that the Germans dropped thousands of them, apparently, all over when they were doing their aerial surveying.
And this is in a book that he copied. And these were the arrows, they called them. And about every 1 kilometer, they would drop one of these things. It was about 5.5 feet high, and you see the swastika on the top of it. And every 10th kilometer, they would drop a 2-meter-long one with a metal swastika flag on it. You see the drawing that Schultz made there of the flag. Where are these things?
Souvenirs. They've been picked up by Americans and Brits, and who knows, I'll bet they're sitting in estates and homes and or buried in ice, I don't know.
Yeah, that was our other thought, you know, if they were picked up, okay, they're gone, but if they weren't picked up, they probably sunk down into the ice.
Mm-hmm.
In the snow and ice. So if that's the case, you're talking some serious work to try to get them out.
The hell of a metal detector to try to even find one.
Right, especially if it's gone down 10 feet, 12 feet, something like that. You're not going to pick them up unless you got some serious GPR stuff.
Well, we'll just wait till global warming melts it all away, then we'll go.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Al
Gore
says
about that.
Yeah, I'm 15 miles inland here in Florida, but according to Al Gore, I'm going to have waterfront property soon.
Oh, God. All right. When we come back, we'll take a look at picture number 8. From Feldwebel Schultz, who is perhaps listening right now over in Europe, and we thank him very much for cooperating. Rule number 1 in this kind of research that Harry does so brilliantly is that any of you out there who have information, who took oaths back when oaths meant something, and we had a world order that was not a new world order, it was a real world order, don't take the information with you. Make sure it's transported, translated, given, transmitted to somebody else, or give it to Harry. We need this so much. It's just not something that can be allowed to disappear. Like that co-pilot dying, what he could have done for all of us, anyway, all right.
And any information anybody gives us, if they say keep their names out of it, we keep their names out of it.
That's right. All right, we have to take a break. We will be back with Admiral Cooper in just a few minutes. Don't go away. It just gets better and better every time.